So welcome to the final session of the first day here at the ICMC 2017. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Meltem Turan from NIST. She is a cryptographer in the computer security division, and she's here to talk to us about two entropy source validation approaches, NIST 890B versus BSI AIS-31. Welcome, Meltem.
Hello, everyone. So this talk is about entropy source validation. The approach is taken by NIST and also by BSI. BSI is the Federal Office of Information Security of Germany. So both organizations have published standards and recommendations on how to construct random numbers that are suitable for crypto applications. And these include some deterministic algorithms, also some non-deterministic parts. And random number generation is generally a hard problem, and there's no single way to solve this issue. That's why you could take different approaches, and these standards have made different assumptions, and they have some differences, they have some similarities. So I want to talk about the differences and how we can align these standards. So maybe, this doesn't move. The slides. Okay, now it works. Okay. Something is wrong. The screen I see is different from here, but I think. Let me start again from the. Maybe some tech people can help me. So this is a different slide that I see. Maybe we can just close PowerPoint and go up maybe.
Getting a right click.
Yeah, this is my slide. Okay, from beginning. Okay, now it's fine. Sorry about that. So yeah, in crypto we use random numbers all the time to generate keys, to generate IV, initialization vectors, or nonces. So in almost all protocols, security protocols that we use, the security relies on the unpredictability of these keys. And we have this figure that summarizes how we could generate random numbers. So we have a lot, we have cryptographic PRNGs, pseudo-random number generators, or deterministic bit random bit generators, DRBGs, that are based on some secure crypto primitives. It can be hash functions, it can be block ciphers. They can generate pseudo random bits. It's fine, we know how to construct them. But the hard part is, the big problem is they need seed to, you need seed to initiate these PRNGs. And the seeds comes from an entropy source. The entropy sources are based on some unpredictable physical events. It could be some thermal noise, radioactivity, a user interaction. It could be, almost anything that you can just extract randomness from. But it is hard to design entropy sources, and even maybe harder to validate and check if they are secure. And I also want to briefly define what entropy is. We'll be talking about this throughout the talk. It's a measure of randomness or an unpredictability. You can have different formulations of how to define entropy. It could be mean entropy, Shannon or Rennie. There are other formulations. They are all based on the probability distributions of random variables. But it is hard to come up with a measure of randomness, measure of unpredictability, especially when you don't know the underlying probability distribution. And sometimes the probability distribution changes over time. This brings an additional challenge. And sometimes there are dependencies between outputs of the entropy sources. This is also another challenge. So these things make entropy estimation hard. So I'm going to give two examples from real world where the random number generation generators can fail. So one of them is a study from 2012. A group of researchers downloaded a lot of certificates from TLS and SSH server hosts, and then they observed that just looking at the public keys, they were able to generate some of the private keys, which was very unexpected. And then how could they find these private keys? And this was one of the reasons was low entropy during the key generation phase. Another example is from Taiwan. So in Taiwan, every citizen is given a smart card which includes some built-in hardware random number generator. And if you want to communicate with government or other citizens, you use your smart card and send encrypted messages to whoever you want to send it. But then, because the database of public keys are available online, and you can download the whole database and study these public keys. And then a group of researchers also did that and see that there are some keys that are generated with very low entropy. And because the hardware, the built-in hardware RNG stuck in very, for example, short cycle that generates with period 3, just 001001. And so this was a lot easy to, you know, recover the public key, private keys of these keys. So because it's a hard problem, NIST and BSI wanted to, you know, publish some guidelines and recommendations how you can design a random number generator. So NIST has special publication series, 90 series, which includes three documents, 90A, 90B, and 90C. 90A is about deterministic random number generators. 90B is about entropy sources, is how to validate entropy sources, and 90C is about how to bring deterministic and non-deterministic parts together. BSI also has two documents, which is one of them is AIS-20 about deterministic random number generators, and AIS-31 is about entropy sources. So AIS-20 is similar to 90A, and AIS-31 is more similar to 90B. Okay, let me go over what NIST is doing, and then what BSI is doing, and then conclude my talk. Okay, so NIST has this, the model NIST is using for entropy sources is here. We have one noise source that extracts randomness from a physical and then we have some health tests. They just check the noise source, whether it just generates the expected, whether it has the expected behavior during operation. And another component is the conditioning component, which may increase, which is optional, and this increases the statistical quality of the outputs. And it can also increase the entropy per bit. And if you look at the last draft of 90B, this also includes a post-processing component in addition to the conditioning, which was we decided to remove that after getting a lot of complaints about it. So the latest draft will not include post-processing component which is inside the noise source. Okay, the basic requirements that NIST 90B has is a lot of documentation about the entropy source, the noise source, and how these components interact with each other. And you also have to justify why the source can be relied upon to generate entropy. And there are some specific requirements to each of these components, and requirements on how you can generate output, and documentation about range of operating conditions. And also, 90B requires an entropy estimate from the submitter. So the submitter should really study their design and come up with an entropy estimate and justify why the source generates some kind of entropy. And if you want to have a FIPS validation as a designer or as a vendor, you first prepare a submission package that includes a lot of documentation, and also then take it to the labs, and labs check these documentation, generate some data from the source, and estimate entropy using the statistical methods provided in the 90B document. For validation purposes, we don't want this estimation to process to be too complex. I mean, due to time constraint, cost constraints, and we don't want the process to require a lot of expertise, especially when we think that the noise sources can be based on any physical phenomena, that we don't want this to require a lot of expertise to especially specific to a noise source. And we also have the restriction that we want any two validation labs to come up with the same result for the same source. Okay, this is the flowchart that summarizes the validation process. We first start a lot of a lot of data from the source, mainly from the noise source, unprocessed as possible. And then if the source uses a conditioning component, it also generates outputs from the conditioning components, especially if it's not one of the listed in one of the functions listed in 90B. Then comes the phase where we estimate the entropy. We have two different tracks to estimate entropy. One of them is IID, which is the simple case. If you have a source that can generate independent outputs and where each output has the same distribution, then estimating entropy is a very simple task. Like if you have a coin that you just flip and one or zero, you get the output. Even if your coin has some bias, this is still an easy job if you know that these flips are independent. But when the flips are not independent, it just gets complicated. When the distribution changes or when the parameters of the distribution changes, this gets complicated, and then we switch to the non-IID case. So we have different methods based on different assumptions and different models, and we come up with an entropy estimate with different assumptions and take the minimum just to be conservative. And we also have we also want to estimate entropy after restarting the data multiple times. So as a requirement of 90B, we restart the noise source like 1,000 times and generate short sequences from this, and then come up with an entropy estimate and check the entropy estimate whether it's whether restarting the machine gives you more information. And okay, another part is the condition. So if you use a conditioning component, this might affect your entropy of your source. And we have two formulas to check to update your entropy estimate based on the conditioning component that you use. So this is what more or less NIST side is doing. Now, so let's switch to BSI. So BSI first define some functionality classes. So they have DRG, deterministic random number generators, which NIST calls them DRBGs. And then they in BSI has physical sources and non-physical sources. They differentiate between physical and non-physical sources. And DRBG ones comes with forward secrecy, which means given the current output and the previous output, it should be hard to predict upcoming outputs. And if you move to DRBG2, in addition to forward secrecy, you also have need to have backward security, given you shouldn't be able to predict previous outputs. And there are enhanced backward and enhanced forward secrecy notions, which also includes the current state of the you shouldn't be able to predict the upcoming bits even if you know the state of the source. And also the physical PRNG, there are three classes. The first one requires you to have internal tests to detect failures. The second one requires, in addition to PTG1, requires some stochastic model and some stochastic statistical tests. And the last one, which is considered to be highest class, strongest class, this requires a cryptographic post-processing. And BSI also has this non-physical RNG, which gets input from user interaction. So the model of BSI and NIST are more or less the same, but BSI differentiates between physical and non-physical random number generators. Physical random number generators are can be considered as dedicated hardware, and they more or less behave similarly for all copies of the RNG. And it is possible to accurately model physical noise sources. But when you look at non-physical noise sources, which exploit the system data, human interaction, then different behavior, the behavior might be different depending on the platform that you're using the RNG. So it is harder to allow have accurate modeling for physical random numbers generators. So the model is more or less same. You have a noise source and post-processing, which we call conditioning in 90B. And the buffer is for the health test. So if there's a buffer and the health tests are going well, the output is generated. Okay. And if you want to be evaluated by BSI, you need to have a very good understanding of your physical true random number generator. And this is same for NIST as well, but NIST does not emphasize the stochastic model that much. BSI says that you need to have a stochastic model that specify a family of distributions that contain the true distribution of the internal random number random numbers, which are unprocessed random numbers that are generated by the noise source. But in reality, it is not that easy to come up with an exact distribution, and that's why a family of distribution that has a true distribution is usually sufficient. And you verify your stochastic model by measurements and experiments, just like NIST does, and then you estimate the parameters of the distribution. You can say that I'm normally distributed, I know that it's normally distributed, but then you estimate the parameters by the outputs that you generate. And once you have the probability distribution, it's a lot easier to come up with an entropy estimate. So it's more like a gray box approach if you want to estimate entropy. In NIST case, it's more like a black box approach. You just generate the outputs, look at the outputs, and then come up with an entropy estimate. In BSIs, you need to have online health tests that are tailored to your design. And this requires a lot of expertise on the analysis, this approach in general. Okay, so to conclude, NIST and NIST and BSI are trying to solve the same problem, that we want to have secure random numbers that are suitable for cryptographic applications. But There are differences in the definitions that we use, sometimes the requirements that we use. If you have a source, entropy source, that is validated by BSI, it doesn't mean that it's automatically validated by NIST or vice versa. And sometimes you need to come up with more documentations to satisfy the other organization's requirements. So, but we had a couple of meetings with BSI researchers and wanted to align these standards. So in the next draft of 90B, NIST is emphasizing the use of stochastic models a little bit more. Not as much as BSI, but a little bit closer to what they're doing. And on BSI side, they can utilize the statistical entropy estimation methods that we have. They're very extensive in 90B, based on different models. They can use these methods to verify their results, so it's possible to align the standards a little bit more. And this is what we're planning to do. Hopefully 90B, the final draft of a final version of the 90B will be published very soon, and you will be able to see them. And that's all I have.
Hello. My name is Alan Gordon. I'm a FIPS consultant. I work with a number of different vendors. And is this on?
Yep.
Okay. And I've just been running through the 90B Python scripts for the second draft. And I'm having a lot of trouble with the requirements for the restart test.
Okay.
Because you have to collect 1,000 samples.
Okay.
And our one particular vendor has got a software module and it relies on the something that happens in the CPU. So we're having to restart the PC every time.
Mm-hmm.
And basically to collect one sample takes about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So 1,000 samples is 10,000 minutes, which is about 2 weeks of man time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've then got three different versions that we're having to collect. So basically it's taking 6 weeks to collect one set of restart vectors. But I took a step back from that and collected, say, one set. So if I made a restart sample just with two samples,
mm-hmm.
and then four, and then eight, and then 16, I wasn't really getting much difference in my result.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point of collecting such a big sample? And do you think it might be possible to reduce that down to something that was more manageable?
Mm-hmm. So restart test, the aim of the, so this is a black box approach. We need data to make good conclusions. And if your data, if your source somehow starts generating the same outputs after restart, we really want to see that. This means that maybe your entropy source has no entropy at all. And if we only look at like 10 bits, 10 samples, this might really collide because of statistical, we might expect some collisions. But if you looked at little bit longer sequences, we are more confident on the results and the entropy that we're obtaining from the entropy source. Yeah, we got some complaints about similar complaints that some of the sources can't generate 1 million samples. Sequential data is impossible. So, but if you can't collect data, it's not gonna work.
But I'm just saying, if I collect, so my restart sample, I have 1,000 samples,
mm-hmm.
gave me a min entropy of say 7.56, and with the restart. But then with the two samples, it was just, you know, it was 1,000th of a decimal. You know, it was less than one decimal point out. So you know, it was 7.5801. So it wasn't a big difference in.
It wasn't a big difference in your design means that your design is good for restart, but there will be designs that when you restart, it keeps on generating the same sequence, and we want to detect those.
Can we have some sort of leeway? Does that have to be 1,000?
Well, 1,000 was a number. I mean, we can't do 30. It's too small. And
it's a negotiation. I think the point's well made. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, thank you. We can discuss this offline.
Yeah, it's on. Yeah, it's working.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah. I had some question on the estimation. So are those three formulas, those three approaches to estimation mentioned in one of those slides used for the purpose of NIST's estimation of the submissions, which the vendor should also use to estimate and submit beforehand? Or because I have seen implementations in the past, OpenSSL implementation, how they estimate is they just assign some number, some decimal number, and then when you pull out more entropy, the total entropy content goes down by a certain threshold. So there are different ways by which estimations are made,
yeah,
which means that end users are unable to come up with one specific formula. So is the formula shared? Because all labs are supposed to give the same result.
Okay, so this is a more general slide. So you can have, if you look at, there are many definitions of entropy. The ones that you use in 90B, and if you want to, it is mean entropy, not Shannon, not Renyi entropy. So mean entropy is more suitable for cryptographic applications because it is about how likely it is to, it measures the unpredictability, how likely it is possible to correctly guess the key. So it's, but it is not easy to come estimate mean entropy either. That's why 90B includes around 10 different methods for estimation, and these are all depend on, like, let's assume your model is Markov, and if it's Markov, this is the estimation. If it behaves in a different way, we come up with different estimations, and then look at the minimum. Just, we want it to be conservative because we are doing a black box approach. We're doing different, we are going over different models that we could think of, and then come up with an entropy estimate for each model. So if you are a designer, these estimation methods are in 90B, they're public, you can look at them and you can apply, generate data from your source and come up with an entropy estimate. These are not perfect, but this is the best we could do at this point.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time for any more questions. But if
when?
If you please feel free to follow up directly,
yeah,
after the session, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
You'll be more than happy to take questions then.
Thank you. Thank you, Melton.